Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Paul Gessing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, on the phone with us today on ABQ Connect. Paul, welcome to the show.
Good to be here, Jim.
Well, as usual, in preparation for the show, you send me all these really cool topics and links to all kinds of background information, which I'm going to post on our website, which is abqconnect.online, where you can find an archive, a podcast of this particular interview. Paul, so much appreciate all the time that you put in, not just for us, but I know you're doing things this morning at another radio station. Hope that's all going well. Do you think people are getting it? Are they understanding the shortfalls we are about to experience in the state of New Mexico in terms of budget, and our businesses are very slowly getting open, and there's a document called All Together New Mexico that I've been actually trying to figure out how to download a copy of it. KRQE-TV has a real nice website up that you can actually look through the document. But so far, I've not been able to figure out how to get the document in my possession.
Well, we'll definitely talk on offline about that, and I'll get that for you. And
okay.
Feel free to distribute it around. It is the All Together New Mexico document is unique in that, you know, this All Together thing is kind of just a project of the governor and her administration. But what's special about it is we've had, you know, weeks of evolving policies in terms of what can be done by businesses and individuals in our state. And she is publishing this to kind of create a baseline for interactions moving forward. So instead of just where are we going every week, this seems to be, and I hate to use the term, but it seems to be her first stab at a new, quote, normal. And it's a pretty scary stab, I think, in some respects. We were talking just before the show about contact tracing, especially at restaurants. And that's a strange thing to bring up at this particular point, having been, you know, 2 months in now. Suddenly you're going to open restaurants to a slight extent and have to require them to trace everybody that they serve. It just strikes me as very odd and especially very invasive of people's civil rights and privacy. I understand we're in a new time period, but why now? Why wait 2 months? Why just restaurants? Why not Walmart and Home Depot and all those companies and whatnot? It just strikes me as unfair and not a lot of science in terms of what's based on.
Well, Paul, you're exactly right. I've seen multiple news conferences now. She has another one this afternoon at 4. And she says everything we do is going to be driven by science. So, of course, and I want to qualify this before we start doing this, Paul. One of the things that I've told our listeners many times is the Rio Grande Foundation is really an amazing source of information. And Paul Gessing, who we have on the phone, is the president of the organization, does a ton of research and has some support from a couple folks. But, Paul, you're really equipping us with the information we need in order to make intelligent decisions about voting. And you don't really criticize without also offering, which you've already done, you've already put out plans and postulated ideas for the last 3 or 4 weeks, which you were hoping you would get some response from the governor's office, but you didn't. And now this document comes out, and it doesn't really seem to address any of the good ideas you've submitted or the Republican Party, or for that matter, some of the conscientious Democrat candidates that have also had ideas. There doesn't seem to actually be a response. There just seems to be this, okay, Together New Mexico, this is what we're going to do. It doesn't really acknowledge anything except maybe a couple national sources like the CDC. Apparently the statistics that the governor has used thus far have all been national statistics as opposed to what's going on in New Mexico. And every time she talks about New Mexico, she refers to McKinley County, which McKinley County is really in a very serious situation, but their county does not represent what is going on in the majority of the state, right?
Yeah, and alongside a group called Power of the Future New Mexico, we put together a website called fairlyopen.com. And the concept was to fairly open New Mexico. That included both being fair to the different regions of our state and the needs to either be more aggressive in terms of locking down or to be more open. And that's been one of the big frustrations I think we've had and a lot of folks around our state have had, is that you have areas of our state with minimal, if any, cases of COVID-19 on the same lockdown as many others of the state that have intense outbreaks. So we know the Four Corners, McKinley County, Navajo Reservation, those are serious issues, but Sierra County, Lincoln County, Lee and Eddy and all, you know, Curry County, Southeast New Mexico has, should have a lot more freedom to move forward. So that's one thing I don't think we're addressing or she's addressing. And the other is just treating all businesses fairly. The big red flag early on about the way we were addressing this as a state was the essential and non-essential distinction. And it's another thing that a lot of conversation has been driven by because, you know, every business that helps the owner or the workers put food on the table, in my opinion, is essential. But more importantly, there's no scientific difference between an essential or non-essential business. I mean, yeah, we can all get behind the fact that a grocery store is an essential store, but you know, restaurants, for example, I mean, you can make an argument, not that I'm saying this, but you can make an argument that restaurants are not essential. If you want to eat, you should make your own food or buy your own ramen noodles or whatever it is. So our view is have consistent guidelines across the board, social distancing, trying to minimize contact within the scope of the facility in question and move forward that way. And that includes churches, restaurants, potentially outdoors. You know, we have this beautiful state that we live in with the sunshine and all the things that we're blessed with. There's no reason, in my opinion, why both churches and restaurants, not to mention other businesses, could have relocated themselves in some kind of outdoor approach right away. But now we need to move on to getting more open just in general as a state. It's been 2 months. You just can't shut down our economy like we have.
Paul, I'm going to go back to the initial opening of our conversation today. I'm reading from the Together New Mexico website. It's all about reopening New Mexico, and I'm actually accessing this through KRQE-TV's website. It's really kind of a nice thing. You can just scroll through it. And you're going to coach me on how I might be able to download this so I can scrutinize a little bit more. But I'm looking at the requirements for restaurants, and they're not numbered. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 things. And the last one under requires is to support contact tracing, retain a log for at least 4 weeks, including the date, name, and phone number or email address of all customers and employees who enter the establishment. Now, let me just tell you, I know I've observed a couple of restaurants. For example, the drive-through at a number of different places like Dion's has just been the lines. The food, first of all, is really good at Dion's, but I can't imagine Dion's trying to track all of these people that are going to walk into the restaurant and want pizza. And I would imagine the majority of them are probably going to use carry out or order and pick up. But I know a lot of people will probably use the restaurant. And if only 25% go in, that's still going to be a large number of people. But when you page to the requirements for grocery stores and, stores like Lowe's and all of that, there is no requirement for contact tracing. So you've already made a decision that is some people are going to interpret that as quite unfair. And logistically, this is going to, I think, cost some money because it's going to require some people to actually take the initiative to track all of these people. And then that doesn't even take into account how customers are going to feel about going into a restaurant and having to give all of this information because they're eating in the restaurant. So there's a lot. There's a lot of questions as to whether this will be effective.
Yeah, and effectiveness is one thing, but the constitutional liberties and the privacy concerns are even more significant. I mean, you know, restaurants theoretically are going to then be required to hold on to this information, keep it private in some way, shape, or form, present it to government officials at some point in a useful, timely fashion. You know, you've got a host or a hostess at a at the front of a restaurant that's presumably going to be in charge of this, making, you know, $8-$10 an hour. You know, that's that kind of information just shouldn't be shared around and thrown around by anybody, especially somebody who's not trained and not, you know, that's not their job really. So there's so many problems. And again, it just goes to this high-handed approach, quite frankly. And I went into this not knowing what to expect. I think a lot of people early on were fearful, justifiably, because we were hearing these predictions of millions of deaths in the country and around the world. And so we were willing to allow the politicians a wide berth. But as we've kind of come to understand the situation, who's vulnerable, who's not, and the fact that we've been under lockdown in this state for 2 months, we need to get moving again or we're going to have a untenable economic situation. And, you know, the group Wallet Hub, which does some great work, they recently found that New Mexico was the 44th most open or the 7th least open. So among the least open states in the entire country in terms of getting beyond kind of the lockdown mentality of this crisis situation. So we are rapidly falling behind, not just our neighbors, but the country in terms of reopening and getting not back to normal, but back to a normal that is revised now with the coronavirus.
After this program airs today, within a couple hours, we will have a podcast of this interview posted. And in the summary, I will be posting website information and links to pages that document all the things that Paul is talking with us today. Paul Gessing is the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. You can access their website at Rio Grande, RIOGRANDEFOUNDATION.org, Rio Grande Foundation, and a lot of the information that they have is very valuable for the upcoming primary. You can read about candidates and their voting platforms and everything that they're arguing. You can look at ideas about our economy. You can see plans about how to get the state open. Paul already mentioned fairlyopen.com. He's got a blog site. Tell us about your blog and the other information that you have available through your website, Paul.
Yeah, boy. Well, one of the things that we've got, in addition to the fairlyopen.com kind of outlining our path, is our pledge. And I know that we're still waiting for kind of the governor to move beyond locking down our economy, but eventually we're going to face some serious economic challenges as a state. And we want to ensure, as an organization, that tax hikes are not used to cover up for the mistakes, both in terms of the lockdown right now, but also the last few years of big spending. And, you know, small businesses have been hit. We're losing restaurants every day. Other businesses are contemplating whether they're staying open or closing permanently. So we have a pledge for legislators and legislative candidates, and we're encouraging, at this point, average citizens to reach out to any candidate, any legislator that may represent them, and ask them point blank if they are going to raise taxes between now and the end of the 2021 legislative session. It's riograndefoundation.org/pledge. And it's not against tax reform. It's not against shifting revenue collection around. What we're talking about is pledging not to, again, as I said, go after businesses and individuals, pull more revenue out of them in order to cover up for the problems created by politicians and the virus and other policies in recent years with the state of New Mexico.
Well, Paul, let's start addressing some of the specifics when we come back. We're going to take a short break, say thanks to our sponsors. We appreciate you joining us today on ABQ Connect. More with Paul Gesing right after this.
We can change the world with the words we say. Hi, I'm Lisa Turkers with Proverbs 31 Ministries. One day, I was eating in a restaurant, and every time our server came to the table, she had something really kind to say. I was amazed by her gracious attitude, and I found it was quite contagious. So I challenged myself to make a conscious effort to use my words as a gift to each person that I came in contact with the rest of that day. You know, in a world that promotes tearing others down to build ourselves up, we can make a difference by using our words to bless and encourage. Let's look at those who we come in contact with today as people who really need a kind word or two. I've found that giving kind words, it's one of the greatest ways to make the love of Jesus known to so many who desperately need it. For more, visit Proverbs31.org.
Admit it. You're smiling under that face mask, and we are too, because Calvary Church is getting ready to say, welcome home, as we prepare for in-person services at all our campuses. Starting the last weekend in May, everything will be in place to make the worship experience as safe as possible for our staff, volunteers, and most importantly, you. With guidelines from the state public health order and prayerful leadership, all services at Calvary Church will be contactless and include things like face coverings, social distancing in the sanctuary and outdoor spaces, digital resources through our app, and plenty of clear signs so you know exactly what to expect. If you're hesitant to come to service or are at high risk, you can still join us online where you can chat and pray live with Calvary Church pastors. We can't wait to be together again May 30th and 31st. For all the details, visit calvarynm.church. That's calvarynm.church.
Hi, this is John Chitwood with Southern Boulevard Automotive. You have heard a word a lot here of late, and that word is essential. Here at Southern Boulevard Automotive, our master certified technicians understand that your car, truck, or SUV is essential to getting you from point A to point B. We are open for business. Our hours are 7 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. And don't forget that we have free towing with repairs. Just call for details. Our phone number is 892-2300. That's 892-2300. We are located on the corner of Southern and Western Hills across from McDonald's in Rio Rancho. And I'm here to tell you that the most essential thing in this life is the cross of Jesus. There is absolutely nothing more important to you and I. God saw you as essential and gave his only begotten son that you would believe in him and have eternal life. Never minimize the cross. It's the centerpiece of the gospel, and never forget the hope you and I have in the empty tomb. I'm John Chitwood with Southern Boulevard Automotive.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Paul Gesing, president of the Rio Grande Foundation, in studio, actually on the phone with us. I'm in studio. Paul's at home working and staying safe with all of his family. Paul, we appreciate the time, and I know you're really, really busy because there's just a ton of information that you're disseminating to all of us, and we really appreciate that. Question came from one of our staff members while we were on the break, and I want to give you this scenario. One of our staff members asked about tracking information security, and the scenario they were thinking about is, let's say that there's a notebook by the cash register, a conscientious person writes down name, address, phone number of the customer, and somehow somebody in the lobby gets a hold of that, takes a quick picture of it with their cell phone, dials up that person's number and says, sir, why not? We regret to tell you that you've been exposed to the coronavirus. Scammers could really take advantage of this information, couldn't they?
No doubt about it. Yeah. In this age of data privacy and people getting those kinds of phone calls on a very regular basis, it's astonishing that the governor would put this as a line in a document that's not just you know, a one-off document. This is a clear guidebook for how we move our state forward on a permanent basis or a semi-permanent basis. And to not really have any explaining language or discussion of how to secure this data, it's really strange. So, look, you know, we're dealing with a situation where the political process as we know it in the states has essentially broken down. We don't have three branches of government. In New Mexico, quite frankly, you know, we're such a one-party state at this point that the legislature probably wouldn't be very willing to hold the governor accountable, and the courts tend to go to the left. The AG is in the pocket of the governor. So it's tough enough, but the governor is really making very sweeping policy changes behind closed doors, and she has no deadline by which she has to give up that power. It's a very troubling situation. And, you know, we have 112 legislators, the entire legislature's up this fall for election. We have primaries going on right now. Mm-hmm. But this fall, you know, we need to ask our legislative candidates, whoever they may be, primary or beyond, what are they going to do to rewrite these emergency laws to make more accountability a part of future crises like the one we're in now? We just can't have a governor totally making policy out of whole cloth without any oversight or accountability.
Well, and it seems like she treats the majority of the state like they don't have any intelligence. And really, all people are asking for is a dialogue. And if there was a dialogue, we probably wouldn't be having this conversations, because we could say, look, this idea was presented. This was the governor's response. This is the compromise. This is where things were shut down. This is, and so there'd be some way that accountability that you're talking about. But this tracking thing, and we're going to move off this topic now. I'm sorry I've taken most of the show with this so far, but I want to get to some other specifics. One of the things that you sent me, Paul, this week is talking about local governments. And you were exactly right that local governments and their budgets have not been discussed at any great length. But Mary McCoy, who is the Santa Fe Director of Finance, released a statement here, I guess, yesterday that the city of Santa Fe is going to have a deficit projected of over $100 million in the current fiscal year. That's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. And Santa Fe, ironically, you know, we kind of know them as the city difference. It's a bastion of progressivism. Most of the major cities in the Rio Grande Corridor, and by that I mean Santa Fe, Albuquerque, and Las Cruces, tend to be in that progressive mold. But Santa Fe has been known as that for a long time, and they've actually dealt with the situation a little more head on than other cities. Now, I understand that the city of Albuquerque has gotten some money from the federal government on the order of $150 million to help tide their budget over. But I haven't heard much out of Mayor Keller in terms of what he's going to do moving forward to be more frugal, to keep that money, you know, and make it last throughout what could be a couple of lean years here. The last thing we want him to do in Albuquerque is just to spend all the money from the federal government and then come back hat in hand in the not too distant future. And Las Cruces is even worse. They've been, you know, there's been no discussion from what I can tell in Las Cruces about what they're going to do moving forward economically. So it's a very interesting and challenging situation at the local level as well. And, you know, while it's easy and justifiable because the governor's been so central to kind of our day-to-day lives for the last 2 months, we're also looking at mayors and city councilors and those kinds of folks and wondering what they're going to do to make sure their own governments can stay funded and do the things that they're supposed to do, especially police and fire and the basics of government.
You bet. Well, Paul, as all of our municipalities and our state try to recover from this epidemic, this pandemic. It seems like there's a lot of conscientious people. Maybe at first we overreact. Maybe as a second reaction, we go the other direction a little bit too far. But it seems like there's a lot of wise people that are giving counsel, and yet it seems like nobody's listening. So, for example, one of the things that the governor opened up here, I believe a week ago or so, were a lot of the national parks. But for some reason, she didn't open up Elephant Butte. And I understand the reason for that is she's afraid that because it has all this beautiful beach area, that everybody, based on what's happening in like California, is just going to go lay next to each other on the beach and forget all about social distancing.
Right. Just to clarify, you said national parks, but we're talking about state parks.
I mean state parks. That's what I meant to say. Yes, sir.
That's okay. Yeah, when people think outdoor recreation in New Mexico, they often think, especially summer, they generally think about Elephant Butte. It's a large body of water relative to New Mexico. It's a place where a lot of folks go out and go fishing and do a lot of different activities. It's also in a part of the state that's been relatively unaffected. Now, obviously, if you have people flocking there from all over the state and potentially up from Texas or out of state, you could create a situation that would lead to the spread of the virus. But what you've got to do if you are creative and work in government and want to see things reopen is limit the number of people who can come into the lake, to really push hard and say, look, social distancing has to be a part of what you're doing. I mean, even on a crowded body of water, social distancing is not that challenging. And plus, you're outdoors, heat and the sun kill the virus. We know that. And just encourage people to not be right on top of each other. I think it can work out just fine with no problems relating to the virus. And they've done it in other lakes around the state. Several of the other state park lakes are open and reopened a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So the governor's not completely unwilling to do this kind of thing, but for whatever reason, Elephant Butte has been closed. And, you know, here we are just days before the Memorial Day holiday, the traditional kickoff to summer. And that's a huge economic issue, I can assure you, for folks in that area of the state that is a poor area of the state, too. So that can't be discounted either.
Oh, absolutely. TRC just is going to be devastated by not having people down at the lake this weekend. I mean, I know it throws off an awful lot of money for them and their citizens. And by the way, what a fun place it is to go to Elephant Butte and to be down at some of the restaurants and things in the TRC area. They've got a great community. Really enjoyable. If people from out of state haven't been there before, we'll invite you to be there. It's a really fun place, and hope that the governor opens that whole area up sooner than later. And again, we all have responsibility, don't we, Paul? I mean, we have responsibility to take care of one another. Now, I've heard every extreme. I've heard people say, oh, well, if you have a mask on, you're actually breathing in too much carbon dioxide. You're reinfecting your body with viruses that you're breathing out. I mean, I've heard all of these different things. But what my conclusions are basically this. I'm going to wear a mask where it is required, because it blesses people when they see you in a mask. And I'm going to minimize that. One of the things I haven't been able to figure out is why I see people driving in their cars with their masks on.
Well, I'm no scientist, and I'm somewhat agnostic about the mask issue. It is an indicator, however, of the unsettled and debatable nature of the, quote, science, that at first we were told not to wear masks, and then suddenly we were told to wear masks, and just how that whole line of thinking has been changing. And it's obviously, you go back and look at a lot of the original pronouncements and discussions and data that was going to be used and looked for, and it's changed pretty dramatically during the couple months that we've been at this. But yeah, I think people to an extent, are just not thinking about what benefits or drawbacks. Because with every medical device or tool, especially one that's covering up your mouth like that, your breathing passages, there may be benefits in terms of not spreading the virus, but there's also drawbacks in terms of what you're breathing in and the air and the availability of oxygen and those kinds of things. And I just think that a lot of people do reflexively do what they are told and don't critically think about what they're being told. And I'm willing to, for the record, wear a mask. Jim, you may know I'm a big golfer. I also play basketball, but at the golf courses here in Albuquerque, you are expected to wear a mask when you kind of check in and you're dealing with the staff at the golf course. And I'm fine with that because that gives me the ability to do something that I wasn't able to do before. And I think as long as you're incentivizing that kind of behavior by opening up the economy, then it's okay. But if you're just saying, you know, going retroactively after a month and a half is really when we saw the mask requirement put out there, and you're suddenly saying, oh, we're going to wear masks, it just doesn't strike me or I think a lot of people as sensible or based on any science or logic.
Yeah, absolutely. Paul Gessing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, on the phone with us this afternoon. I want to encourage you as a listener to go to the riograndefoundation.org. If you want to just Google Rio Grande Foundation, do that, and it'll take you to a website that's just really amazing. Tons of information. And in regard to this interview, we're going to put up a podcast as we do with each one of our shows, and I'm going to give you links. So for example, Paul has a story that we've just been talking about, the city of Santa Fe and $100 million projected deficit. Mary McCoy released that information. She's the director of finance. Paul has a nice link to a story about that on KOB TV, and you can go right to their website and read all about it. So you don't have to memorize everything today. You may enjoy re-listening to this interview, but we're going to have plenty of reference links for you so that you can go to those. And then we always want to get you on Paul's site. And Paul also makes a living by getting people to support him. So you can figure out how to give money to the Rio Grande Foundation. I think they do a great job. So, Paul, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about this big pool of money called the Permanent Fund. Ask you to explain that to us and why the incumbents want to start using that money to help us recover from Corona. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Ben Lucero, president and owner of Indigo Mortgage. In the society we're in today, COVID-19 is on the top of all of our minds, and rightly so. But we can also look at the bright side of life, like God still loves us and He loves our families, along with giving us an opportunity like no other to spend time together without the busyness of life. At Indigo Mortgage, we believe in helping families, and we're blessed to be considered an essential business by the government. So we are able to continue helping clients and their families, either by refinancing to a better rate or by helping fulfill their new home purchase. Although we cannot meet face-to-face, we have a full staff available by phone, email, or you can complete an application on our website. Indigo Mortgage is honored to be part of this community, and we're here to help. Contact Indigo Mortgage today, 836-5700. That's 836-5700, or on the net at indigomortgage.net. NMLS 23-1962 and 188-348, and may God bless you.
Hey, New Mexico. The spring and summer months are hard on your car, and that's why Power Ford makes it easy for you to take care of it. From routine maintenance to vehicle checkups, our quality service costs less than most of the places that promise to get you done quick or in a jiffy. Allow the experts at Power Ford to help you take care of your car. We'll also include a sanitation and disinfectant treatment. All makes, all models, and you never need an appointment. If you're looking for a better deal and a better experience, come see us. We're on the affordable side of Albuquerque, on Montaño, west of I-25.
High Desert Hospice, like you, your family, and businesses, are operating under conditions few of us, if any, have ever experienced before. We are, however, operating. As the crisis continues, we are doing what we can to support our patients and community. We are well supplied and prepared to give the same quality service and care as always. I believe we will get through this with the least amount of inconvenience if we continue to self-isolate. God bless your family and from our family at High Desert Hospice.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Paul Gessing on the phone with us this afternoon on ABQ Connect. Paul, you always spend a lot of time with us, or at least we think it's a lot of time, but it goes by like a jiffy. Already over halfway through the day today, so thanks again for joining us. Hey, let's get to the whole, you know, New Mexico budget issues. We already know that the $1.6 billion or $1.7 billion increase in the budget for 2020 over 2019 was approved back in February. COVID hits. Simultaneously to that, the oil prices fell through the floor, and our state all of a sudden is not going to have anywhere near the revenues it had from gross receipts or from oil and gas revenues. But there's this thing called the permanent fund. Can you explain what that is to us?
Yeah, it's a fund, and New Mexico has several funds, but the one that is kind of always up for discussion is the land grant permanent fund. It's got, I think on the order of 20 or so billion dollars. So it's a very substantial fund. And the idea behind it was created back when New Mexico became a state. And the idea was New Mexico is a resource rich state. And, this was the progressive era. This was a political era in which, the powers that be, and not really in any political party, you know, Teddy Roosevelt was considered a progressive. Woodrow Wilson was a progressive. One was a Republican, one was a Democrat. But they wanted to be paternal in their approach. They wanted to kind of control things. And this money in the permanent fund was set aside for various government programs in the future. So New Mexico has this permanent fund, and the one we're talking about, money is invested. It comes out of the oil and gas, so it's taxed from the industry. It's invested by people in government and the State Investment Council and folks like that. And then the revenues, the interest payments that spin off, that come out of that money, are then allocated every year to K-12, to the education system, to higher education system. There's other beneficiaries. You know, I know the school for the blind and the school for the deaf, but the big ones by far are K-12 and higher education. And there's a ratio that's used to determine how much of that money comes out annually. What the advocates typically in recent years have been arguing for about a decade is that we should raise the amount of money taken out of that fund and use it for pre-K and a variety of early learning programs for children as young as three years old. And the Rio Grande Foundation, you know, we'll get to, it's a lengthy discussion about the merits and demerits and all the challenges moving forward, but Rio Grande Foundation has opposed tapping into that permanent fund, not because we necessarily oppose accessing that pool of money to benefit the state of New Mexico, but because the pre-K programs that are being advocated for are not necessarily as justified and justifiable in data in terms of improving education and life outcomes as a lot of the advocates want us to believe. But obviously that discussion's changed, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes.
Well, I want to bring up early childhood education as one example. I believe the legislation was HB 2, Early Childhood Education Allocation of Monies. It was an interesting thing for me to find out that it was signed off on by the governor's office. It's quite a bit of money. But then when I had David Piercy, who is the president of the Albuquerque Public Schools Board of Directors, I asked him about that, and he said, well, Jim, none of that money is coming to APS. And it seemed, after I talked with him and the research I did, that this money was allocated for early childhood education, but there was no plan for how to spend it. And that always baffles me, how you can allocate that much money without a plan.
That is a excellent point you're making there, and it's one of the concerns that we have, because this is a proposal that would require essentially a new bureaucracy, an entirely new system to educate or set up this system of education. And just to clarify, in the 2020 legislative session, it was HJR1, and that's an important distinction for a couple reasons, because one is a bill is just a bill. HJR stands for House Joint Resolution. That means that it's a constitutional amendment. And, you know, we can talk about the mechanics of actually putting a system like this in place. But one of the issues moving forward, and that's been discussed in the past, is that you have to amend New Mexico's constitution. That's a process by which the legislature passes something like a law, a joint resolution, and then you have a vote of the people, and you actually need congressional action, somewhat undefined, but U.S. Congress, which they don't do anything. Well, they're very effective at passing bailouts and spending a lot of money, but in terms of actual policy legislation, they seem to struggle, but that is a very complicated and lengthy process that would have to be embarked upon to get access to this money. Now, for the proponents of early childhood education, and what they're talking about is a combination of a new pre-K system for younger children who are not, you know, three and 4 year olds who are not in kindergarten. Mm-hmm. But there's also a system of home visits, and those have some effectiveness. But it's a very comprehensive, complicated, and multifaceted approach. But the big bucks, the spending, comes with this new pre-K system, because you're essentially setting up a new set of schools all over the state, new system for administering it. It's a very costly and complicated thing to do.
Paul, one of the things that you like to do in your research is you like to see best practices from other states. What are other people doing? How are they reacting? And one of the things you pointed out to me is that California's governor just called for a 10% across the board cut to government employee pay. And yet you've observed that in our state, none of those concessions or things have been initiated. Why is that?
Yeah, and before we jump into that discussion, I do want to top off the conversation about the permanent fund. So what the conversation has evolved to as we've hit this coronavirus situation is that the governor mentioned it, and a few legislators in the House who have traditionally supported tapping the permanent fund, spending more money out of that fund for early childhood, are now also talking about, hey, let's tap into that permanent fund for, you know, kind of keeping the government going in this difficult economic time. And that sounds like a reasonable proposition, but I think we also need to have a serious conversation about addressing what government does and how government does what it does for the benefit of New Mexico, but also because the process, as I mentioned, you've got to pass it through the legislature. And John Arthur Smith, the state senator and finance committee chairman, a Democrat, has opposed tapping the permanent fund. He said he would oppose it again on this issue. Then you've got to get a vote of the people, which probably will succeed, but you never know. And then you've got to have Congress act. So it's a very complicated proposition to just tap that permanent fund. You can't do that overnight, not very easily. Mm-hmm. So there's that. And then talking about California, you know, we have been most critical about our governor in that when she talks about what is your solution, well, the permanent fund is one of the things she's mentioned. Very few other specifics about the economy has she really talked about. She's known as a progressive, known as an advocate for bigger government. She got a lot of that big government passed in the last 2 years when she had the governor's mansion and both houses of the legislature on her side. And we spent nearly 21% more over the last 2 years relative to when Susana Martinez left office. But other governors across the country, including progressives, and California is second to nobody, no state, when it comes to progressive policies and politicians. And Gavin Newsom is a very progressive governor. And yet he has put forth a 10% across the board pay cut for all government workers in the state of California. And so even California is ahead of the curve relative to our own governor when it comes to what we're doing about our state budget. So the numbers are mind-blowing when you talk about California and their budgets and whatnot. It's a huge state, of course. But just by way of comparison, of course, New Mexico's annual budget, the general fund at least, is $7.6 billion, as passed earlier this year. The deficit we face is upwards of $2 billion, maybe $2.4 billion, depending on when we get things going economy-wise and oil and gas-wise. California is facing a $54 billion deficit. That's not even considered. That's just the deficit they face. So just incredible what California is going to be dealing with as well. But every state has their challenges, and New Mexico's economy is not as robust as California. So we're going to have some challenges moving forward as well. But that's, at least the California governor's acting in a way that's proactive and trying to address the budget issues that his state faces.
Well, we do have some things that are positive, at least trending positively in the economy. Oil and gas, still not to break even, but I understand crude is up to about $33, $34 a barrel, which is up quite a bit. I mean, we were in negative territory 2 or 3 weeks ago when we had you on the program. So it seems like that the world supply is, they're not, putting out a lot more oil. So supply is down. Demand is starting to increase. I guess a few more people traveling. I know use of jet fuel and all those kinds of things had been reduced by over 50%. People slowly starting to get back to traveling, and maybe that whole industry will turn around and that will be a big boon to New Mexico. But we've got a lot of work to do. More ideas from Paul Gesing. Stay with us on ABQ Connect. We'll be right back.
He's a no-nonsense conservative fighting the Washington machine. Congressman Jim Jordan took on the radicals and the liberal media, defending President Trump in the sham impeachment hearings. Now he's asking for an ally in the fight, Yvette Harrell.
I'm fighting for our country and our president every day, and I'm asking you to send Yvette Harrell to join us in that fight. I'm Jim Jordan. I've known Yvette for years. She's rock solid. She'll boldly stand with President Trump to secure our border, hold China accountable, help restart our great economy. Don't believe the special interest lies you're hearing. Vote Yvette Harrell for Congress.
Conservative leaders like Jim Jordan, Mark Meadows, and Mike Huckabee endorse Yvette Harrell for Congress because they know she's the only candidate who has consistently stood behind President Trump.
I'm Yvette Harrell, and I approve this message. I'm ready to join proven conservatives like Jim Jordan in Congress to take on the radicals and defend President Trump.
Vote trusted conservative Yvette Harrell for Congress. Paid for by Yvette Harrell for Congress.
Listen to this hotspot as Skip Heitzig shares a lesson about owning your faith.
So he is mentored by this priest. He becomes king himself, Joash, Jehoash. So now you have a politician with a godly background. He does what is right in the sight of the Lord.
The story doesn't end there.
But his righteousness only lasts while his mentor lasts. When his mentor dies, when the priest dies, he starts taking on the values of the people around him.
Find more from Skip at connectwithskip.com.
If your faith is only propped up by others, you will stumble when those props are gone.
Now this from Skip about deep roots.
You need to come to a place where you build your own roots, man, and you stand before God yourself, man or woman of God, and you are getting the strength directly from the Holy Spirit so that when they die or if they fall or something happens, your faith is not shaken.
Your faith is not shaken.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Paul Gesing, president of the Rio Grande Foundation, giving us a ton of information. And because of that, I want to let everybody know that on the podcast, we will be giving you a lot of reference links that Paul provides us just to allow you to research these questions for yourself. And Paul, my next question really is about the RioGrandeFoundation.org website. I just went and clicked on the 2020 New Mexico Legislative Scorecard. Tell us about these grades and what they mean.
Yeah, well, the legislative session this year seems like ancient history at this point, but with the primary elections coming about as we are right now in the midst of that early voting in the primaries. A lot of folks are doing that via the absentee ballot process, but the early voting sites are open, at least around here in Albuquerque. The Freedom Index simply rates elected officials in the legislature on their votes on freedom issues, individual freedom, economic freedom, and whether they are voting to promote that freedom, to expand that freedom, or to put more government regulations and more limits on your freedom. And it's a great tool. I think it's nicely formatted. Every legislator gets a grade on do they vote plus positive. So a positive number means they're more pro-freedom, and a negative number means that they're voting against freedom. And you can really get a sense of how folks are voting up in Santa Fe. Now, these are floor votes. There's, you know, some of the insiders up in Santa Fe will say, well, you know, a lot of the most important decisions are made in committees. And that's an accurate statement. But traditionally, New Mexico's legislature has not published committee votes. So when you're trying to hold folks accountable, you can't really get that information. So what we've used is floor votes. And there are a lot of important votes. Obviously, many, many decisions get made, and the final decisions get made on the floor of each house. And those bills typically pass into law when they hit that floor. And that's what we're trying to hold them accountable for.
Paul, why on your website do you have a whole section on the Constitution?
Well, because, you know, the Constitution of the United States, I mean, we value the Constitution of New Mexico, but the Constitution of the United States really is the rules of the game for government. And unfortunately, and it's been many years in both parties, they have both violated in many different ways the Constitution. And, you know, we're seeing right now the way I think personally, and I think it's, you know, if you read the Constitution, it doesn't require a lot of gazing at the language to come to this conclusion that we're seeing pretty rampant violations of the U.S. Constitution right now in many states across our country. And we understand that this is a crisis situation. Violations of the Constitution have been happening for many moons outside of the crisis situation. And we just need to, as citizens, be aware of what that document says, what it doesn't say. And I think, you know, interpreting it, hopefully in the way that it's written, in the way the Founding Fathers intended. And it's a tough battle, especially when people are afraid, when politicians come in and they say they're going to solve a problem, whether it's a virus or some foreign threat or whatever it might be. But the Constitution needs to be the rules of the game. And if it's not adequate to stand to that challenge, then it needs to be amended and done properly, not just overruled and ignored.
Yes. Paul, tell us about the Tipping Point podcast and what you do with that particular form of communication.
Well, Jim, we do a lot of talking to various media outlets and trying to get the word out in this state because education is so critical. And that really is the mission of our organization as a 501c3. And Tipping Point New Mexico is a podcast that folks can listen to at their convenience. You know, we're on all the major platforms. I think podcasting has been one of the beneficiaries of the current situation because folks have time to sit down and listen to what's going on. And you can really micro target your understanding of the world around you. And I think New Mexico, we just need more people to be engaged and involved in the state and its political future because we've kind of allowed the political classes to run wild here, not just recently, but for a long time. And we're trying to push back against that. So we have two different shows that we air. TippingPointNM.com is one way you can find that. Our website, RioGrandeFoundation.org, is another. Like I said, iTunes, Stitcher, all the other platforms. But I talk with a fellow named Wally Drangmeister, who's also the producer of the show. We kind of have an informal conversation about the latest news in a way similar to what we do here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then we also interview somebody who has a lot to say about either New Mexico or national political and economic ideas. Just this week, and it'll be released tomorrow, I talked to a woman named Deborah Burns, and she is a venture capitalist based here in New Mexico. Those are the kinds of folks who they try to get businesses going and try to get businesses funded as they move forward and grow. And she's working here in New Mexico to connect venture capitalists outside of government. So these are independent people using their own money, but to engage them in essentially building needed infrastructure in our state, you know, roads and bridges. It's not just about using government tax dollars to fund these things. There's also ways to leverage money, especially in these federal stimulus packages, to build needed infrastructure and do so with private dollars being part of that equation. And it's a really neat approach. And so we talk about that. And she also was part of the organization of the U.S. or New Mexico China forum for matchmaking of businesses and industries a couple years ago that took place at the Albuquerque Convention Center. So, you know, China has obviously been a very interesting issue in, you know, this whole virus epidemic and just the political future of China and the United States. And since she has dealt with the Chinese personally and their government and whatnot, we also have a brief conversation about, as Trump would call them, China.
Yeah. Well, hey, I'll tell you, there's comedy on both sides of the aisle. I'm starting to get so frustrated with both the Democrats and the Republicans and why they can't seem to talk about anything. I had Bishop David Cooper, who is a pastor here in Albuquerque. He's been a major part of the Black community in our city for a really long time. We talked a little bit about race relations. And one of the interesting comments that he made, Paul, was that the hatred and the lack of cooperation that you see between the Democrats and the Republicans right now is akin to racism. And it's going to destroy our country if we don't figure out a way to get rid of it and start talking and get some things done.
Yeah. We do need to try to work together better as a state, as a country, to solve our problems. And, you know, the virus, in some respects, there's a lot of conversation as this was all getting rolling about 9/11 and comparing it with the virus. There's no doubt that after 9/11, people came together in a unique way. And unfortunately, that hasn't really happened with the virus situation. There's a lot of reasons for that. Changing political culture is part of it, but I would say the dynamics of a virus versus 9/11 and the way that shocked everybody has had a lot to do with it as well. And getting to the bottom of that is a difficult situation. But really, what we do need is to get away from the extreme partisanship. Now, principled advocacy for the Constitution, you know, I don't think that's extreme. You need to focus where people are, you know, taking extreme personal attacks out on somebody. You know, if you have a policy disagreement, I think that is a reasonable thing to hash out and hopefully do so in a respective way. And I do that, you know, I'll throw it out there for folks on Twitter at P Guessing, PGESSING, and at Rio Grande FNDN. You can follow us there. We try to be respectful and informative, just like we are here. And I think having those discussions is important.
Thank you, Paul. We appreciate you very much. Paul Guessing, Rio Grande Foundation. We'll see you tomorrow on ADQ Connect.
ADQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Thank you, Jim.
Is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ADQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.